WSJU Radio, Mad Max Radio, St. John's University. We have a very special guest in here, horror icon, Kane Hodder. Kane Hodder, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. Sorry about the background here, but I'm
garage. So what are you doing in lieu of conventions this year? Because unfortunately, due to COVID-19, there's no conventions.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't done a single convention this entire year. Last year I did 23 of them, I think, and no conventions so far. I did do a couple of in-store signings that went very well, one in Vegas and one in South Carolina, and they went great. I mean, people wore masks and I wore a mask, and everybody was just happy that something was going on. So that went really well. And evidently there's a convention in Phoenix, Mad Monster Party, in a few weeks. And that one's still on, supposedly. So that may be the first one of the year.
That's good. At least you do get to do something.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you can tell the people that do these conventions just for the money, and yeah, the people that do them because they enjoy them. And I enjoy them, and I like meeting people and stuff. So it's, you know, it'll be nice when they start up again. I think we're starting to come to the end of this thing, so hopefully.
I'm hoping. I remember being at a convention in which you said, you know, some people do it for the money, some people do it because they enjoy it with the fans. Just seeing two actors changing their prices, raising them during the convention for signings. I've seen that before.
Oh, well, you know, I want to ask you who that was, but I won't.
It's someone you know. It's someone you
know. Oh, is it a horror person then?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I may know who that is. Anyway.
So I remember I met you at Count Orlok's Nightmare Gallery in Salem, Massachusetts. I met you twice. Yeah. I remember the second time I met you, you asked me where I went to, St. John's University. And you told me you gave a speech there years ago.
I did. I used to do quite a few college events where I would just, it was a program I had with my buddy, Alan, and we would, it's based on the fact that both of us were stunt people, and you know, so there was a lot of stunt things and interaction with the audience, and of course a lot of horror information and content, but it was a lot of fun. I spoke at like 50 colleges around the country. Some of them had me back the next year, so you know, that's when I guess the budgets for college speakers didn't dictate that they had to be, you know, necessarily politically or any kind of necessary content. It was just pure fun, and it was great. I loved doing it.
Yeah. I was also choked at your convention by you, of course. Where did the where did the choke originate from at your convention?
Oh, boy. You know, started years ago by someone asking, hey, can you pretend to choke me? So as you know, when I would do that pose, I would choke you a little bit.
Yeah.
And of course, someone ended up trying to start legal proceedings because of the choke. And so I can't do it anymore. But
oh, you can't do it any as of this is recent?
In the last year, yeah, I can't, or year and a half, I can't do the choke pose anymore.
Whoever that is soft.
Well, I agree, but they thought they could get some money out of it or something. And, you know, I guess it wasn't real smart for me to be doing it a little bit to people because you never know who can take what, but it just became kind of a rite of passage with fans. Mm. Oh, hey, you got to take a picture with Kane. Let him choke you, you know, so.
What happens if a fan asks you to choke them? Can you do that or you still can't do that?
No, I still can't. And they say, I'll sign a waiver. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But I just unfortunately have been told not to do the pose anymore. So now I do friendly ones, or sometimes I do the pose where I can choke with my arm.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, like I did with you with my hands. So, you know, I've been told I probably shouldn't do that either, but I still do that once in a while if somebody's really disappointed, you know.
Mm. Let's start a little bit from the beginning. What was it like growing up in California?
Well, I mean, you know, when I was younger in high school, I was in the South Pacific. So I didn't really move to LA area till I started trying to get into the stunt business. So that, you know, I grew up in the Marshall Islands.
Okay.
And, then in my, you know, early teens, I guess, I mean, not early teens, early 20s, I moved to LA to try to get my career going. So
for the fans that don't know that are listening right now, how did you get the role of Jason Voorhees in Friday 13th, Part 7, The New Blood?
That was by impressing someone in a previous film with
prison,
working
right?
In prosthetics, which was John Buechler. Yeah. I did a movie called Prison with Rennie Harlan, and John asked me if I would mind wearing prosthetics and playing a character in the movie just for a couple days. And I said, sure, I haven't really done that before. So it was very tedious process, 3.5 hours of gluing stuff on. And then I played the character. He liked how I worked in the makeup. So the next year he was hired to direct Friday the 13th Part 7 and said, I want this guy to play Jason. And what helped me was that the previous six movies was six different guys that played the character.
Yeah.
So they weren't set on anyone. So Buechler just kept trying to convince them, this is the guy, I'm telling you, there's a lot of stunts to do for Jason this time, and he can do all of them instead of having an actor and a stunt double, because then the performance never looks consistent. So he was able to finally convince them. It was all Buechler. I will always give him the credit for me having played Jason the first time, for sure. Because I personally thought CJ did a good job in Part 6, and he probably would have been asked to do it again had it not been for Buechler campaigning for me. So yeah, we lost him last year, unfortunately, but yep. He's the one that made that whole thing happen.
What was it like putting the mask on for the first time?
Oh, man. You know, it's so hard to explain to people, but I think you can imagine, in a way, this is a character that has had six movies already. So this, everyone knows the character. Like even nowadays, when you ask someone if they're a horror fan, oh, no, I never watch horror movies. I've never seen one. Do you know who Jason is? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was so widely known around the world, the character already. And just imagine that you're the person who's now putting that mask on and playing the character. I couldn't believe it, really. I felt like I really could play the character well, but I was just couldn't believe that I was actually being given the opportunity. And, you know, it was just like, I felt like the luckiest person in the world because I was now, you know, we wearing that mask, you know? So there's no way to ever describe how much of an honor I felt it was. I don't know if other guys felt that, because like in the early films, you know, the character wasn't so widely known. Like when Brooker played the character and stuff, it was kind of just like an acting job.
Yeah.
But by the time I did, then, you know, and it was so known, I couldn't even believe that it was me. Mm.
What's your favorite scene that was in The New Blood? Because I know your favorite kill is the sleeping bag, but what was your favorite scene?
I mean, you know, only because of my stunt background, doing the fire stunt was probably my favorite, because out of all the fire stunts I've done, and you already know, but maybe some of your listeners don't, that I was burned doing a fire stunt my first year in the stunt business. So not a great way to start your career, but almost dying from a stunt. So you would think maybe I would avoid that stunt in future years, but of course I ended up specializing in fire instead. But that, out of all the fire stunts I've ever done, that's still my favorite one because of the amount of fire and how long I was on fire. Because, you know, it's very tricky to do a fire stunt because you need to know when to hit the ground and be put out. And that particular stunt is so well photographed and so well orchestrated that I just love it. And, you know, it's iconic. It, when, you know, because a very small percentage of stunt people even do fire.
Yeah.
So, and that's with qualified stunt people. It's very, very specific type of stunt. So I think that's my favorite scene in the whole movie, even though, you know, there's so many other good scenes. That one, just because of my stunt background, sticks out. And I don't know if we talked about this when we were talking before, but I don't know if you know what the very first shot I ever did as Jason is.
Michael, in the living room.
Yes, you do. Okay. That's right. I didn't even know you would know the character's name. Bill Butler played Michael, and with the tent stake through his chest, standing there when Tina has a vision, that's the very first thing I ever did as Jason. First thing I put on film, because obviously we know that films are not shot in the order that they're presented, you know.
I know you love the makeup the most out of all the other films in Part 7 the most.
I do. It because, you know, not only does it look amazing, but it was also really difficult to work in because here I'm doing stunts with one eye.
Yeah.
One eye is completely covered. The other eye has the yellow lens on it. So, and then you have to do stunts. So it's not easy, but I just thought the look of the makeup was so incredible. I think it was Beekler's best work, you know, considering he did the makeup and directed the movie.
Yeah.
It's basically his movie, you know?
I watched To Hell and Back a few months ago, of course, which released a few years ago when COVID happened and our university shut down. We were able to still run our radio station, but I spent some time at home watching things on Amazon Prime. And I saw your To Hell and Back film up there. And I loved it. I watched it. It was very interesting to just how you overcame the burns and just going through that process and being able to admit that to all your fans, as well as bullying, because I've gone through bullying.
Oh yeah,
as well. It's rough.
It's so much more insidious than anyone realizes. They think bullying is just part of life. It's harmless. Well, it can be, but it can also be very detrimental to someone's, you know, state of mind, and it can stay with you for years. Which is why I try to do whatever speaking engagements that, you know, try to help people, not just kids, but people through bullying situations, because I know, and as you're saying, you know, that it can really mess with your mind, and not just the physical, but the emotional, you know, effects that it has.
Yeah. You feel really insecure. I remember just feeling insecure when I was younger, when I was bullied.
Yeah, and then you start thinking poorly of yourself, or you can start thinking poorly of yourself because why didn't I do something to stop this? And I'm worthless. And that's when it really spirals out of control sometimes. And it just, you know, it's insidious.
Yeah. And I just look back and say, look where you're at now, look where I'm at now.
That's right. See that? And is the school back in full session then?
Yeah, it's half and half. Some people are working remotely from home. Some people are working on the campus. I have to go to the campus once in a while. Like, the show is always live, and we're always live on the station still and around the campus. But I always have to go there because I'm the president of the station to make sure everything's running well.
Right. And is there a picture of me in that background there?
Oh, that's in my other room. I'm in my music room. One. Yeah, I have your three autographs.
All right, that's good. That's in the better room. Okay, good.
Yeah,
these are all like black and whites. It looks like.
Yeah, it's all 90s hip hop pictures.
Yeah. Hey, here's a speaking of which, here's a trivia question for you because you're pretty knowledgeable about my career. What movie did I do with Tupac?
I couldn't. I didn't even know that you did a movie with Tupac. So that's insane.
Yeah, it was a movie called Nothing But Trouble.
I didn't even know. I never seen that before.
It was Chevy Chase and John Candy and Dan Aykroyd and a big, huge comedy movie, and he was in it.
That's what was he like?
A good trivia question.
It is. What was he like, Tupac?
I didn't talk to him too much, but he very low-key, nice guy from my experience, yeah. A couple of the main actors weren't quite as nice as he was, but, but we won't talk about that either. But yeah. I was not really stunt doubling, but I was acting doubling Dan Aykroyd in the movie. If you ever try to do a search on Nothing But Trouble and then the name Bobo. Dan Aykroyd played two characters in prosthetics. And whenever he was the judge or the justice of the peace, I was Bobo, and a real big fat baby with a diaper and galoshes. And so that's what I did on that movie. You gotta search that. You'll crack up when you look at what I look like in it.
I definitely gotta check that out. What year was that?
That was 90s. I'm not sure exactly what year, but I think mid-90s.
Mid-90s.
That's where, and you said all that's 90s hip hop back there, so.
Yeah. I know you're a big fan of the Insane Clown Posse.
Yes, I am, and Twisted as well. I've been fans of all of theirs for quite a few years, and I've worked with Twisted a lot, doing some music videos and some events together. So Madrox is a pretty good friend.
Mm. I want to ask you about this as I watched in the To Hell and Back documentary. I saw a picture of you choking Mike Tyson.
Yeah. I know. Isn't that amazing? How many people get to choke Mike Tyson?
Not too many.
Like on my phone, I have so many fun pictures that I show people. There's one I'm choking Norman Reedus from Walking Dead, yeah. Tyson, and you know, so many others. I wanted to choke The Rock.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
In a picture, but I thought, maybe not. Maybe I'll err on the side of caution for once.
So how did you, where was it where you met Mike Tyson? Was that a convention or you just saw him during the industry?
It had to be at a convention, but I think it was one that, there's one I do in Virginia once in a while that has mostly athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I think it was at that one, and he thought it was pretty pretty funny, and he didn't knock me out, so that's good.
That is good. To Hell and Back, how long did it take you to put that together?
Well, Derek Dennis Herbert is the one that approached me about it after Aloisi wrote the book Unmasked and thought he'd like to do the visual version of my story. And he convinced me that we should do it. And I'm really glad I did now because, you know, when you're doing it, I had thoughts about, do I want to talk about all of this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, I have kind of an image of a badass guy that, you know, always is a violent person. And I thought, you know, but Derek convinced me, and he was right, that he said, if people see the other side, they're going to really connect with you more. And sure enough, he was absolutely right that, you know, the macho stuff is fun, sure, but when you connect with somebody on subject matter that is sensitive or can be sensitive, and because somebody can relate to it so much better. And he was so right, and I'm so glad I did it, because I get nothing but good response from it. Mm-hmm.
Something I never knew was that Wes Craven actually had you in for an audition for Freddy Krueger in the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, it wasn't really for an audition, but I had done, what was that movie? The Hills Have Eyes 2.
Okay.
With Wes. And he on the set, he talked about that he was developing a new character. We were just sitting there at lunch talking. He said, yeah, I'm coming up with a character that's going to have burn scars like yourself, he said, because, you know, as you know, I have a lot of burn scars over my body from getting burned. And he thought, he said, I think I'm going to have him have burn scars, and I may use an actor that has real scars. And I said, what's the character going to be called? And he said, I think I'm going to call him Fred Krueger. And obviously, as we know, they decided not to go with real scars and went with a very talented actor in Robert. And he made that character iconic.
And to this day, I wish you weren't Freddy vs. Jason. What they did to me was just, I was pissed off about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, some people think, hey man, that's part of the business, which it is. You can never count on anything in the film business. But what bothered me the most about it was that I was given the script and told I was doing the movie. Then I was replaced. That's way worse than never having a conversation and suddenly they use somebody else. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
But when you're told you're doing it and then you don't do it, that hurts more. So, and you know, it's something that will never go away, the pain of being replaced. But, you know, again, even the way it happened, that's part of the film business. So.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever play Jason again if the opportunity came about?
I think you know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Of course. And what better time to bring me back than right now for the 13th movie?
Yep.
It would be the 13th movie. The only person that has ever played the character more than once
is you.
Because after me, there was two separate people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because even Kurzinger, who played Jason in Freddy Versus, was replaced by Derek Mears in the remake. So I'm still the only one that played the character more than once. And
yeah,
just give me one more chance, man. I would love to do it.
They got to have a 13th film. They have to. It only makes sense.
Yeah. Maybe end it after that, but who knows? I think they're coming up with a couple more Halloween movies, so.
I heard that. You'd be interested in playing Michael Myers.
I've always loved that character. I thought that was always an amazing and scary and fun character. And, you know, I don't ever expect it to happen, but I always said I would love to play Michael because, you know, I did one shot as Freddy.
Yep, Jason goes to hell.
And then stunt doubled R.A. on Chainsaw Massacre 3. So I did quite a few shots as Leatherface. So I just need to do one official shot as Michael. Other than, you know, I did do a short for Adam Green where I wore the Michael mask. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No, I never saw it before.
It's called, you'll find it on YouTube or on Aeriscope.com. It's called Driving Lessons. Mm-hmm. It's pretty funny, really. I'm taking driving lessons as Michael from Joel David Moore, who was in the first Hatchet movie.
Is that kind of a twist of what was said in the first Halloween film? Maybe someone gave him lessons.
That's exactly why Adam did it. Because they show that scene and whoever it was says, well, what did he take driving lessons? And then it cuts to me getting in the car with the driving instructor. It's pretty funny. You got to look it up. Driving lessons.
I got to check that out.
Boy, your knowledge is good, man.
Yeah, I know all about horror. Some of my favorite horror movies is someone that you're inspired by, actually. Boris Karloff's Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. I always, as a kid, loved that character. I loved all the classic monsters.
Universal monsters.
Exactly. The creature, Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman. I had all those 1 foot models when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I put them all together and painted them and stuff. And I wish I still had those because they're probably valuable now.
Probably.
I didn't keep any of my collections. I had a huge G.I. Joe collection. Ooh. The 12-inch G.I. Joes. I had Matchbox cars. And I didn't keep any of it. And that was stupid.
What'd you make of the Abbott Costellos when they met the mummy, met Frankenstein?
Yeah. I didn't like those as much because I liked when they were serious.
Yeah.
Serious movies, you know. And that's why when I first started doing conventions, one of the people that I was most excited to meet that is on the convention circuit even now was Linda Blair, because The Exorcist is my all-time favorite scary movie. And I was so excited the first time I met her, and she's become a great friend and everything, but it was very exciting to meet her because, like, you know, this is when I was kind of new on the horror scene. Just Part 7 was out, so people were starting to take notice of my performance or my name, whatever. And then I was able to meet her, so that was fun.
Did you see The Exorcist when it came out in the movie theater?
I did. That's the thing. If you're not old enough to have seen it when it came out in the theater, you do not know the impact it had on the viewing audience, because, you know, there was stuff in the news about people swearing that they got possessed just from watching the movie in the theater. So by the time you went to see it, you were scared to death. And it was such subject matter that nobody ever came close to touching at the time. I was just old enough to see it in the theaters.
That's crazy. I wish I was around to see it in the theaters too, just what it was like.
Just incredible. You know, it's even to this day, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
What movie can you say that came out in the early 70s that still you don't look at and laugh because it's so dated?
Yeah.
And that movie is still good. Still scary.
I look at Jaws the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good too. And that was shortly after The Exorcist.
Yeah.
I think Jaws was 75 or something.
Yep, 1975.
Yeah.
It's a great one.
Classic good movies.
How is it on the Arsenio Hall show? In character is Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, well, you know, he called and said, hey, I'm a fan of your work as Jason, and I'd like you to be a guest on the show. I was like, oh, wow, that's great, because Arsenio Hall was huge at the time.
Yep.
And I said, that's fantastic, because nobody ever gets to, you know, see what I look like. And he said, well, wait a minute, I want you to do it in character. I was like, well, you dumb fuck. I'm in character, I don't speak, and you want me on your talk show? That's what I'm thinking. And he was like, yes, I think it'll be a funny bit. And then I realized, oh yeah, of course, totally makes sense. He's going to make it very funny, which he did. And I just stay in character. So, and the thing is that he told me before I got the costume on, and by the way, the costume I wore on his show was everything from Part 8 that I actually wore on the set. And I still had it because it was shortly after we finished with the movie. And he said, I know it's going to sound stupid, but I'm a little nervous about you being in character. So please keep that in mind. And of course, you know, when you tell me something like that, I'm gonna mess with you. And if you watch the clip again at the end where he goes to shake my hand, I grab his hand and pull him towards me, and he really, you know, gets nervous. So he made it fun. It was a great time.
Yeah. Getting into Jason Takes Manhattan, because we're based in Queens, St. John's University. What was it like shooting a movie in the middle of Manhattan?
You know, as you know, that we only shot one night in New York. Mm-hmm. The rest of the movie was done in Vancouver, Canada. And we came to New York at the end for one final night of shooting in Times Square. And it was unbelievable because there were hundreds of people watching, because Times Square, let's face it, they clear the whole place out for us to be able to shoot as if it's kind of abandoned, and people are held back behind barricades watching. And I just felt amazing, because all I would have to do is, and I never took the mask off because I wanted to keep the image for the people watching. And all I had to do was stand there and look in one direction at the people, and they just went nuts in between shots, you know. So it was probably the most fun I've ever had one single day of shooting on any movie. And I've done like 170 movies now. So that was just amazing. I don't even think you could do that again nowadays.
Yeah.
Hope, you know, it control all of Times Square for a shooting of a film. I don't think they could do it.
Yeah. I never knew that it was an entire Times Square that was controlled for that movie. That's something I didn't know.
And I was on the middle traffic island. And when you watch the movie, it's so funny because, you know, there's a subway platform supposedly in the middle of Times Square, on one of the islands in the middle of Times Square, which of course doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So you watch, it's just a plywood piece of set. And you watch the two actors supposedly coming up out of the subway, and they squat down, and they, as they walk, as if they're coming up the stairs, they just do that.
Yeah.
It looks so phony when you know it, because they're like giving the illusion that they're coming up the stairs that don't exist.
Yeah. That's just an iconic scene where it's just shot and you're just looking around in the city as Jason.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kicking the radio and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the PC dialogue that the guy yells at me after I kick the radio. Do you remember what he says? Does it?
You're dead meat, slime bag. Is that what he said?
Oh, very close. You're dead meat, slime bag. Well, wow, that's a scary, tough guy saying, you're dead meat, slime bag.
I thought he said slime head.
No, slime bag.
Oh, wow.
Slime head would actually have been more accurate, but.
I have the picture, actually, of one of your autographs of when you're kicking the radio. I like that one.
Yeah. And, you know, first take, of course, I kicked the radio. And I never thought I should look down to see where I'm walking. I don't think Jason would do that. So I kicked the radio and keep walking like that and trip over the goddamn thing. And we had to do it again. So I keep waiting for somebody to have a photo from one of the people watching from the side and showing me tripping over that radio or something. Because, of course, you're not going to leave that in the film. But somebody has to have a picture of that somewhere.
Yeah. What also I found interesting is the Jason Goes to Hell makeup. It's so different from all the other films. The head's bigger.
Yeah, the mask never came off. Like,
yeah,
you know, all the other Jason movies I did, I in between shots I could take the hockey mask off. Part 7, it didn't do much good because my face was all covered with prosthetics. But Part 8, my face was open, and even Jason X, my face was open. So if I took the mask off, I could eat, I could drink things, but Jason Goes to Hell was the mask was embedded into the makeup. So once it was on for the whole night of shooting or day of shooting. So
was that the longest makeup job for your role as Jason?
No, part seven was the longest time, application time, but Jason Goes to Hell was the most uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. It was so incredibly hot. I still don't know why it was so much worse than anything else I had worn, but it was. And, you know, so it was very hard to work in, which is one of the pluses of not being on screen as much. I didn't have to suffer as much. It's easy to bring that rage when you're suffering.
Yeah. What was the most difficult stunt in the Friday 13th films that you did?
Other than the fire stunt in part seven, probably, you know what? It has to be everything in part seven, because the roof collapsing on my head was very difficult. You know, so many tricky stunt things in that movie that overall was the most difficult. Jason Goes to Hell, I didn't do much really. I only killed one person, I think, as Jason, and didn't really have to do many stunts either that I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And part eight, you know, it was a lot of fighting and stuff like that. So
the rooftop fight was classic.
Yeah, that was great. Like hell when I punched that head off the dummy, though.
Yeah,
I realized it was going to have like a solid mass underneath the sponge of the head. It was really heavy, and it did end up in the dumpster by accident, which is why they shot it that way after the fact.
Landed right in there.
It off, it worked, and landed in the dumpster. And people and everybody said, "Oh, we got to shoot that. That's amazing." So we had to recreate it.
What was it like making the video game Friday the 13th, the game?
Fantastic. I was honored that they thought I should do the motion capture. We did it for not constantly, but off and on for a year and 10 months, the motion capture for the game. And, you know, it's just, it was really fun because it's so different. Motion capture is so different than doing something on film, that not just the way you're dressed, I'm in spandex and sensors everywhere, but it's the way you have to create action, you know, because I would be the stunt coordinator on the game as well. And, you know, when you're doing a film, you want something, a stunt thing, to look good from maybe one, two, maybe three angles. That's it. So when you design a stunt and perform it, you just make it look good from the camera angles that are shooting it. With motion capture, there's 75 cameras simultaneously shooting every move you do. So it's hard to make a stunt, like a fight scene with somebody, look believable from every possible angle. So you have to keep that in mind, and it's a different process.
And I have that game. I remember when it came out a couple of years ago, I was surprised because you never see a slasher, classic slasher horror game.
Yeah, I know. And I'm hoping they do more.
Yeah.
Gun Media did a great job with the game, and I'm hoping they do some more classic stories. You know, the other day I was wearing a t-shirt that says hotter camping equipment. And somebody was asking me, why are you wearing a shirt with your own name on it? I said, well, it's because it's an Easter egg in the video game where that's a logo on the camping equipment.
Yep.
Just because it's fun for fans to see different things like that. Like the island I grew up on, Kwajalein, that's in the game, and the hotter camping equipment logo, and, you know, and, it's just fun for fans that are playing the game to find those things.
I have an interesting question for you. being that you were a fan of all the previous Friday 13th films. As you know, in the second one, Jason doesn't have the hockey mask. He has the burlap sack. How come they chose, from what you know, how come they chose to go with the hockey mask for the rest of the films?
I think once they made the choice in the third one, and I've often wondered who really is credited for coming up with that idea. You know, you never know. You hear different stories, but I wonder whose idea it really was. Hey, why don't we take this sack off and give him a hockey mask,
yeah,
a goalie mask? Because, you know, if you knew the NHL at that time, that is what goalies really wore.
Yep.
And were masks like that, which is so much different now. But and once the movie came out, I think people realized, boy, that's an iconic image. Let's try it again. And then once they did it part four, then that was it, you know, even though the hockey mask totally changes every movie.
Yeah.
They never really explained, but it totally looks different. Still a hockey mask.
Yep.
And I kept all my masks. I think we talked about that. Yeah. I kept all my hero masks from the movies.
Got to get into Victor Crowley. What do you love most about the character of Victor Crowley?
Basically, the most rewarding part of it is that it was my character from the beginning. So, you know, when you take over a character that other people have played, you can try to add your own flavor to it, which is what I did with Jason with the breathing thing and all that. But when you originate a character, it can be so satisfying because it's up to you, basically. All the trademark characteristics you come up with is all you. And you don't have to worry about a previous performance, and you can just do what you think is right. And that's why when we did the first Hatchet movie, I was like, I hope we do more of these, because I have ideas about the character that I want to develop throughout more than one movie. And because if you watch the Hatchet movies, I made Victor very twitchy and nervous looking in a way, almost like he's not used to this. And as the movies went on, I don't know if it's really something that the audience notices, but I purposely made him feel more comfortable with the violence as it went on. And I just, you know, not used to it at the beginning. By the time we get to the fourth movie, this is just standard procedure. So it was great having a character from the beginning.
Yeah, the mannerisms in it were, as you said, the twitching. That's what made the character too.
Yeah. And then, you know, just the makeup was good. Again, Beekler. The story is great. And some of, you know, what other horror actor, I don't think there's anyone that has killed more other horror actors than I have.
Yeah.
I mean, I've killed Freddy, Michael Myers, Leatherface, Jason.
Yeah.
We killed Derek Mears in second movie. And, you know, all these people that are known in horror, I've killed them. And I maintain that I've murdered more people on film than any actor in history. So,
got that. I think it's true.
I think so. I don't know how anybody could dispute that, because four Jason movies, four Hatchet movies, then playing people like Ed Gein and BTK, real serial killers, with multiple murders in each movie, you know, I don't think anybody can dispute that.
Yeah. Is there going to be another Hatchet film? There was a cliffhanger at the end of the fourth one.
Oh, yes. I'm hoping. I'm hoping. Yeah. I know what the idea was to continue with, but obviously I can't say. But yeah, I would love to do one more or two more.
Yeah. Definitely another Jason. I have to see that. I want that to happen.
I'm not done killing yet.
Yeah.
I am not done killing.
Another couple hundred.
That'd be pretty good.
I want to talk about your podcast. You also have a podcast too.
Yeah, it's called Casualty Friday with Felissa Rose and Tiffany Shepis. The three of us do it together. We just recorded an episode remotely like this for the next season. We had some already done, and we did that, and we're talking about doing another one in a couple weeks. So it's great to do something with people that you know really well and you have good chemistry with, which is both of them. And, you know, obviously I've killed both of them too.
Yeah. In
previous movies. There's not many people I deal with that I haven't killed somewhere.
No.
But yeah, we just have a good time, and the time flies, you know, and all of a sudden you're done. And wow. So.
Yeah. That's usually what happens.
Yeah.
Kane Hodder, do you have any other upcoming movies you want to discuss here? Any upcoming work at all?
There's an interesting movie I did. When was it? Well, in the last number of months, and I don't think it's been released yet, called 13 Fanboy. And it's a movie about a guy who's obsessed with Friday the 13th and Jason and starts killing people. I play myself in the movie and I get in a fight with him and it doesn't go well for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a dying scene in the arms of an actress named, oh God, I'm spacing on her name now. She played young Tina in part 7.
Oh, I think she played in Leatherface. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, too.
God, why can't I think of her name? I know it very well. God damn it.
I'll look it up for you.
Yeah, please do. While I'm telling this part of the story, look it up, will you?
Yeah.
it's, you know, I'm dying in her arms, and the director named Deborah Voorhees, by the way, mm-hmm. her real name, I asked if I could do a second take of my kind of dying scene. Jennifer Banco, sorry. Jennifer,
that's her name?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm dying in Jennifer's arms, and she was young Tina in part 7, and now she's an adult, obviously, and I'm dying in her arms. And I had scripted dialogue, and then we cut, and I asked the director if I could do another take and do some ad-libbing. And I said, you'll know when to cut when I close my eyes. And I went on this big emotional thing about my dad, because you know that I lost my dad before I ever became successful as a stunt person even. He was around for me to get burned and almost die, but never didn't live long enough to see that I made the right choice and had a good career. So it's always been a sad part of my life. And so I talked about that.
Yeah.
In my dying scene, because I'm playing myself, so I could talk about anything. And it was really emotional. And then I closed my eyes and cut. And I look around. The boom operator, you know, with the microphone, is crying. One of the other people in the crew is crying. These are not actors. These are people just watching the scene. So it seemed to be a pretty effective scene, and I'm anxious to see how it comes out. So that's one movie. Another one I did called The Good Things Devils Do. Have a really nice scene in that where the camera doesn't cut from me speaking for 3 minutes. And that's almost unheard of in a film for an actor to get a 3 minute long scene. And this, I'm talking about no cuts to other people reacting or anything. It's just one take of me, you know, doing some terrible things to people, but talking about it. And so I really am happy with that scene as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting question I have too is, why do you think people love horror movies and then there's other ones who can't even sit down and watch it? They cover their ears, they walk out of the room when one's on. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. That's an interesting question. I don't know, because like you're saying, some people just eat it up and look at every moment, and then other people don't even want to hear it, let alone look at it. And it's just, that's how powerful horror can be, that it can have that, it can elicit that kind of response from so many different people. And, you know, I just feel fortunate that I have made a nice career in something I loved doing. So I busted my ass for it, but I also had some fortunate circumstances happen, and which is usually the case. Anybody that's successful in something probably worked very hard, but also had a couple things go their way at the same time. So it kind of contributed. Mm-hmm.
Who's your basketball and football team? Because I cover sports on my show. I want to get a little sports talk in.
Yes, I had a feeling you might. Well, I'm a Lakers guy.
Rest in peace to Kobe Bryant.
And he, you know, he crashed very close to my house.
Really? Because I know you live in Calabasas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was just I'm in one neighborhood. There's one next to me, and he was on the other side of that one. So, yeah, that was a bad situation. And, you know, other than liking the Lakers, just because I have since the 80s, that I don't really have necessarily any big teams that I like to watch. I just love watching sports. And, you know, love going to a hockey game too, man.
Yeah.
Out of all the major sports, to attend a hockey game in person is the most fun, because it's more intimate. You know, it's not just a giant stadium. It's an arena that's enclosed more so, and you can hear everything better. So, and plus there's fighting allowed.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
You root for the Kings?
What other sport is there where they allow guys to beat the shit out of each other until one of them hits the ice, then it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Football, you throw a punch, you're out. Basketball, you throw a punch, you're out.
Hockey, you throw a punch until you hit the ground. That's it.
Yeah. That's pretty much. Now, do you root for the Kings?
Not as much. More the Vegas team, actually.
Yeah.
Because I have some connections. And, you know, I built a house in Park City, Utah, which is where I am right now. And down the street from me is an NHL goalie. Happens to not be in the playoffs right now, but, and also there's a big lead pitcher that's down the street, and Johnny Damon used to live here. And it's a very cool neighborhood. And we've been enjoying the less restrictions up here.
Yeah.
You know, LA is pretty tough to do anything in. So, but I'm going back to the Calabasas house soon.
Yeah. I know you live near the Kardashians, right?
Yes, I do.
Oh, God.
Yes, that's exactly right. Oh, God. No, I mean, they're fine, but they got some amazing cars, man. Some of them, geez, I didn't even know Rolls Royce made an SUV.
I didn't know that either.
And they were driving next to me going up the hill to our neighborhood, and I noticed who it was, and it was one of them. So Rolls Royce SUV. Didn't even know it existed. Beautiful car.
I'm not surprised with the money they make.
I know.
It's unbelievable. I'm glad their show's coming to an end, but.
Have they been fine? I don't have any problems with them.
If you did, you'd choke them.
Right. That's all.
Oh, Kane Hodder, I want to thank you for coming on my show here today. It was an honor. I'd love to have you back in next year. And if you have anything else to promote, we'd love to see about getting you a speech up here at St. John's University too, because you used to give speeches. We'd love to have you give speech to our body.
Check into it. And, you have my contact info now, and let's stay in touch, and good luck with the show.
Thanks, Kane Hodder. I appreciate it. I want you to stay safe and take care.
Thanks, man. See you.
See you.